Mark Zuckerberg really seems to have messed up this time.
He didn't have too much of a good reputation earlier as well. I remember watching one of his interviews back from, I think, 2010, where Kara Swisher and Walt Mosberg interview him and he starts sweating and all that. It was mostly about privacy and stuff.
Wait, is it the one in which he pulls off his sweatshirt?
Yeah, they actually ask him whether you want to take off the sweatshirt, but he says no. But within 5 minutes, he's sweating so much that he himself says that, you know what, I think I'll take off the sweatshirt.
Seriously, man, back then only we should have, like, you know, caught on the clues and, you know, removed our accounts.
But then it's not that we are like some big shots where people are going to use our data for something. I mean, we are probably insignificant.
But still, if someone gets to see our, you know, internet history, we just prefer to die rather than that.
Yeah, I read one of the stories which was a little scary. I think it was a guy from New Zealand or something. Seeing everybody deleting Facebook these days, even Elon Musk deleted his SpaceX page and Tesla page, which was a big deal. He also thought he'll delete, but before that, he wanted to download all his data. So if you go to Facebook settings, you can download all your data offline. When he did that, he could actually see the call records, his contacts which were in his phone and which were not in his phone, which were, I mean, like the ones which he has already deleted. And also the SMS records, metadata about the SMS, all recorded in the Facebook data, which ideally has nothing to do with Facebook, right? So if you see, when you install the Facebook app, it asks for permission to access everything in your phone, right? So it's basically tracking every single thing about you.
Oh my God.
And even one more thing I read today was that if you ever use your credit or debit card for your Facebook ads and stuff, next time you buy a burrito, Facebook knows that what you're doing with your card. So it can actually trace all the transactions that you do with the same card.
And that's like seriously bad. And one more thing, there is a new feature where you don't have to enter your email ID or your new username again and again, so that you can just click on your picture and then put your password and log into Facebook, right? But when you open Facebook, if you have some notifications, like once you log in to the to Facebook, you'll have that notification, number of notifications shown in your picture.
Yeah, even when you're not logged in. So that is kind of scary. I've thought about it many times. That means that you're virtually logged in all the time. Just that for you to enter your, you know, Facebook is asking the password. So even when you're logging out, you're not actually logging out. And so I just want to mention a couple more things. One is that if you're logged into Facebook in any of your browsers or any tab or something, it keeps a track of every single website that you visit and every single clicks that you make and what kind of content you're looking at. So next time when you log into Facebook, you kind of see a lot of similar advertisements and stuff. So there are times when I check some products on Amazon, when I go to Facebook, I keep seeing those things there as well. Second thing which I found interesting stuff was that go to your Facebook profile, okay? Open any of the pictures or your picture or something. And when you do, there is something called inspect element that you can see in Chrome, which is basically used by developers to see the, you know, code that is running behind HTML code and stuff. And if you right click on the image and if you do inspect element, when you go to the, so every image tag in HTML, I think you understand HTML a little bit at least. Yeah. Image tag has something called an alt tag. So alt property actually describes the image. So for some reason, if your image is not loading on your HTML, that whatever text content that is within the alt tag will be displayed. So that the, it is also good for SEO where the search engine gets to know what actually is the content of the image. So if you go upload an image to Facebook and if you do a right click and do this, you will see the alt tag is updated by some kind of you know, AI algorithm of Facebook where it actually completely identify whatever is in the picture. So if you put your picture, if you are drinking something in the image, it will actually have an alt tag saying Shankar is drinking something. And if you have a dog with you, it will identify that as well.
It'll be like one person and one dog or something.
Exactly. It will also identify whether you're indoors, outdoors, if you have mountains next to you, whether you're in a function, whether there's a wedding and stuff like that.
I remember checking one of the reunion photo which we took when we went back to school. So it had a tag called, you know, a lot of people, a lot of individuals, probably a wedding or some reception.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was scary. Anyway, the thing which motivates people to compromise on these things are, I think it's money most of the times. And Zuckerberg now has around like $74 billion. So, but what is the point? When you die, does it matter that you have like billions of rupees or dollars in your account?
Our friends at Musafir Stories, they put out an episode recently about Satyarup Siddhanta, who is a mountaineer and he conquered Everest recently, right? So he had problems in his life, like he was an asthma patient and all that stuff. But in spite of all this, he went ahead and he's scaled most of the tallest peaks around the world and, you know, also did the same with Mount Everest as well. And I went to his website where he mentions the same thing. You know, when you're at deathbed, you're not thinking about how much money you made or how many things you have and how what all you possess. It's about those key moments that you define for yourself and you achieve the goals that you want to achieve. So he set a impossible goal for himself of climbing Mount Everest, which would have been very difficult for him. Yeah, right. But then with his hard work and all that, he achieved it. Money, if money is just the objective, these kind of things do happen. Now that we are talking about that, I think we should set a goal which is like extremely scary. Don't you think?
Why not climb the Mount Everest?
Well, I saw that movie Everest
a few months
back. You know, it just seems a little scary.
Don't feel like it, right? Probably yeah. We'll do the same thing which Joey and Chandler did. We might end up renting Die Hard.
Yeah, I have another idea. Why don't we go to South Pole, man?
Oh, yes.
Seems to be easier because South Pole was conquered much before Everest was.
Yeah. South Pole was conquered in 1911 and it took almost like 40, 42 years, 1953.
Yeah.
When Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay conquered the summit of Everest.
Exactly. And Antarctica is an interesting place. It's one of the continents in the world, but it's, you know, mostly uninhabited. There are very few people who live there. And mostly are scientists. And it was discovered around 1820s.
Okay, then I think we should probably talk about the South Pole expedition in this episode.
Of course, we can talk about that. Welcome to Writer and Geek Show. We are your hosts Vishnu and Shankar.
So today we're going to talk about the South Pole expeditions which happened in 1911. Anyway, so we have planned that we are going to the South Pole. Why not let's start with a few facts about Antarctica.
Sure, we'll get into the history of Antarctica and few interesting stuff, you know, about the most remotest continent in the world. So, Antarctica was relatively unknown till 1820s. That's when it was discovered during a Russian expedition. And no human landed until 1895, when a Norwegian expedition went to Antarctica and humans actually set foot on Antarctica. Before that, there was, you know, the people had this idea about a southern continent which might be existing at the South Pole. Because most of the continents that people knew, like North America and Europe and Asia and all, existed above the equator. So they thought that there should be something which is kind of balancing this, all these northern continents.
That's a very funny concept.
Yeah, and they call this unknown continent as Terra Australis, which incidentally was the name which was supposed to fall for Antarctica, but because Australia was discovered before Antarctica, they thought Australia would be that continent, right? Because even when Australia was discovered, people were unaware of a continent which was just south of it. Even Captain James Cook, during his voyage, he came around 120 kilometers vicinity of Australia, Antarctica, but he never discovered it. So it took one more century before people actually went to Antarctica and, you know, kind of understood that there is a southern continent. Well, Antarctica is basically a desert. There's very little precipitation that happens there, apart from little snowfall. Very extremely cold, goes without saying. One of the most coldest places on Earth. Where in the winter, the South Pole can go, the temperatures can go down to minus 67 degrees. Imagine that temperature. You know, minus 67 is something that I don't think we can ever imagine.
I don't even want to.
Yeah. And they have long winters. Also, around 98% of the continent is covered in thick sheet of ice. When I say thick sheet, it's around 2,200 meters thick. That's like 2.5 kilometers almost.
Wow.
And Antarctica contains 90% of all the Earth's ice, which in case if it melts, which will raise the sea level by 61 meters, which is okay for Bangalore, I think, but not that much okay for cities like New York or Cochin or any of the cities who are lying on coastal area.
I think we made a good move by moving to Bangalore.
Of course.
Anyway.
And Antarctica is not owned by any country as such, but there are claims which are made by countries like Norway, UK, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Chile and Argentina. They have their stations as well. Russia also has a claim, I suppose. But these are not identified as real political boundaries or something. You don't need to have a passport to go around. It's just that they claim the land for themselves. That's all it is. And this is a result of one of the treaties which was drawn up in during the Cold War times, which prohibited the use of Antarctica for military and any kind of industrial purpose. And that is a good thing. It still retains its pristine nature, which was existing for billions of years before man came into the Earth.
Yes, if there was no treaty of such a kind made for Antarctica, it would have resulted in being something like the Great Barrier Reef, which exists in Australia. Because I read about it and the condition is pretty bad, it seems. Great Barrier Reef being one of the places which I personally want to visit before it, you know, disappears. But I think, I'm not sure if I'll ever be able to make it. Might be too late. Yeah.
Well, Antarctica doesn't have a permanent population. Most of the population that is there, around 1,000 to 5,000 people, depending on the time of the year, is mostly scientific community. They do their experiments and stuff. No better place to do experiments than Antarctica because it's mostly pure and, you know, without any pollution and all that stuff. And for 7 months, from Feb to November, there will be no ships and planes landing there. That is a winter season, right? So it's completely cut off from the rest of the world. In fact, the people who stay during the winter season are more isolated than the astronauts in ISS. Right?
Man, think about that.
Exactly.
So it's closer to, like, the continents are closer to the ISS.
What? ISS is what? 200... kilometers above the Earth's surface, 200 to 300 kilometers.
Oh, and these are like thousands.
This is like thousand, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think the nearest airport is in New Zealand.
Hmm.
I think it's called Christchurch. It is 5 hours flight from Antarctica.
Wow, that's so remote.
It's very remote.
Seriously.
And they have to be with themselves for seven months almost.
See, the thing is, if something happens, like a blizzard or like some natural disaster, and they die out, we won't even get to know.
Yeah, and in the peak winter season, there are videos on YouTube, you can go and check. There is mostly a continuous blizzard of around 55 to 65 to some miles per hour. So if you open the door, you cannot go out. So you have to stay within the habitable area and all that. And they have food and other supplies stocked for 7 months. No, you cannot go or come in. Flights cannot land. Basically, they have runways built of snow and ice. You cannot have tarmac runways there because everything is on top of the ice shelf, right? So they are completely isolated. So Antarctica is kind of an interesting place with a lot of penguins and stuff. And around 1,000 humans at a given time.
Okay. So, yeah. The topic being South Pole Expedition, the first South Pole Expedition. I don't know how many of you know about this. There were actually like two parties which were planning to reach the South Pole for the first time. So the first one was Robert Falcon Scott, who was from the UK. And the second one was the Norwegian named Roald Amundsen. So, you'll have to bear with me here because there is lot of information here, and because there are like two parties, the timeline will collide a lot. So let's start with a brief description about Amundsen. So Amundsen was from Norway, as I said, and his mom actually wanted him to be a doctor. So she had made him promise to her, like, you know, when you grow up, you become a doctor. Otherwise, I won't be happy. I don't know what kind of stuff. I thought it only happens in India, but back then it used to happen in Norway too.
But India is just catching up, man. This was 100 years before, right?
True that. So, when he was 21, his mom died. And he was like, you know what? She's gone. I don't have to do it anymore. I'll go follow my passion and, you know, become an explorer.
Oh, so that means he never believed in afterlife and stuff.
Probably. We never know. Yeah. So back then, this happened during the earlier stage of, you know, like the 20th century. And it was during the colonial times when countries were in constant search of, you know, upholding their pride and all that. So back then, they had conquered all of Africa, Asia, Europe. Europe was already conquered, I think.
Europe was the one which was conquering all these places.
Yeah, of course. Yes. And South America, even the Australian continent were conquered by...
was British Europe colony. Years. Yep.
So they turned their gaze to, you know, the Poles.
Poles, you mean people of Poland?
No, I meant you know, North Pole and South Pole.
All right. You know, I know someone who was interested in poles.
Hitler was the only person who was interested in poles. Let's not go there. Yeah. So they turned their gaze to the poles, and they were like, you know, on a race to reach the poles first. I mean, North and the South Pole. So Amundsen, he had this plan to conquer the North Pole first, and he had actually traveled to the Arctics in 1890s and all that. And he had a lot of experience under his belt, where he had gone through terrible cold climatic conditions and had scurvy. And that's where they got to know that they have to be like properly prepared if they wanted to like do an expedition to any of the, you know, poles. And when he was planning in 1909, when he was planning to like get the fundings and make an expedition to the North Pole, there was Robert Falcon Scott, the person from the UK, who was planning to conquer the South Pole. And actually, because of that, they had opposite interests. It were like polar opposites, right? Mm-hmm. Like two sides of a coin. And because of that, they were like reasonably like good friends. And they actually helped each other with, you know, sharing equipments and like helping each other with all the technology, all that things, little bit of things and all that. So when Amundsen was getting all the sponsorship, all the money, all the aids, funds and all that to conquer the North Pole, he got to know that a couple of Americans named Frederick Cook and Robert E. Peary had already reached, they claimed that they had already reached the North Pole. So at the same time, Scott was on his way to the South Pole to conquer it. So Amundsen was like, you know, what is the point of being the second person to go somewhere? No one will remember you. So his plan was like, you know, I'm going to change this thing. I'm going to not go to the Arctic. I'll go to Antarctica and see if I can conquer the South Pole.
I think someone told the Americans that there is oil in the North Pole.
Probably. Yeah. But there's a claim that it was just a claim. There's no evidence that they actually reached the North Pole. And it's actually credited to Amundsen when he later on in 1926. I'm not sure about the date when he flew over the North Pole in a plane, that he is credited to be the first person to, you know, conquer the North Pole too. So what happened was that both had a clash of plans, you know, to conquer the South Pole first. But what Amundsen did was he didn't even let his crew know about this plan. And talking about the crew, Amundsen had a reasonably small crew of 19 people. And because Scott had the backing of the government and a lot of fund raised for this project, because it was all about the pride.
And of course, they had a lot of colonies to squeeze money out of.
Yes. Yeah. So he had around like 65 personnel in his squad. And UK being one of the major superpower during that time, they could afford it. But Norway had actually got independence a few years ago, before all this thing happened from Denmark and Sweden. So it was reasonably unknown about Amundsen and his expedition. Anyway, with his small crew, he knew that when more people get to know that North Pole is already conquered, his funds will start drying up. So he thought that, you know, I already have some funds. I'll do one thing. I'll move to the south, and then I'll tell people that I'm actually going to the south. So Scott was on his way. Amundsen borrowed a ship called Fram. And if you know, like, Robert Scott was traveling in the ship called Terra Nova.
Mm-hmm. His expedition was called Terra Nova, right?
His expedition was called Terra Nova Expedition because his ship's name was Terra Nova.
Okay.
And Amundsen's, you know what Amundsen's expedition was called?
Amundsen's expedition was called, I don't know.
Emmett's in South Pole expedition. He didn't go for a, like, you know, Fram expedition or anything like that, just because his like ship was named Fram. So he took his newly modified Fram, the ship, and he started from Madeira, Portugal. So he had planned to go to South Pole a month before leaving Madeira. And he had only told his first in command, who was like, his name was Edgar Evans, and his brother. Those were the two people who knew about his change plan. And once they left Madeira, that's when he told the whole crew that, you know what, we are not going to the Arctic. We are going to Antarctica.
You know, he's actually lucky that they didn't throw him off the ship.
Yeah, but I don't know what happened, but they had like a lot of confusion over there, but when they sat down and talked about it, all of them, not even a single one, opposed the plan, and mm-hmm. they were all in agreement. And when he, like, when Norwegian people, they got to know that his plans had changed, the funds suddenly started drying up, and he knew that he couldn't afford to go to South Pole if he does not have any help. So he got some help from some other people who are like business magnate, and he told Amundsen that he'll help get him fuel and all other consumables which he'll need for the South Pole journey. But the thing was, he had to first travel to Argentina and get his ship filled with all the consumables, and then from there travel to Antarctica. So when he reached Argentina, Buenos Aires, he sent a telegram to Scott saying that, I'm coming to Antarctica. I have changed my plan. I'm coming to Antarctica. He didn't say that he's aiming for South Pole. Mm-hmm. He just said that, I'm coming to Antarctica. And
suddenly the friend became the foe.
Yeah, the telegram was sent to Melbourne because he knew that once Scott would start from, UK, he'd go to Melbourne first. And then from there, he'll go to New Zealand. And from there, he'll move to Antarctica. Scott, when he reached Melbourne, he got the message, and of course he'll be infuriated. So the thing was about the equipments and those things which were shared by Amundsen and Scott. He used to call him once Amundsen had changed the plans. Amundsen stopped picking up calls from Scott, and all this kind of stuff happened, because if he gets to know that he's going to South Pole, there'll be like a lot of issues.
And picking people, up call. Yeah. Did they have cell phones back then?
They had, earlier phones, whatever thing which they had. So
I'm imagining that, Amundsen waking up in the morning and seeing like 10 missed calls from Scott.
It was not like that.
And probably, using Truecaller to block his number as well.
Probably. Maybe he blocked him on WhatsApp too. Who knows? So at Melbourne, he got to know that, Scott got to know that they had changed their plans. So now they were on a race. But the thing was, Scott actually had other plans to do some experiments, scientific experiments. So his priority thing was reaching the South Pole. And he had a lot of other scientific experiments to conduct, geological experiments and collecting penguin eggs and all that.
Was that legal? I mean, well, today you can't touch penguins. I mean, it was colonial time, right? So
is that a law that you can't touch the penguins?
Yeah, I think I've heard from one of my friends who has a cousin who keeps going to Antarctica. He's some kind of scientist or something. I think one of the law is that if the penguin is approaching you, you don't touch it. I don't know who is monitoring all that. I don't even know whether there are cops in Antarctica.
Who knows? They might have CCTV cameras and all that over there.
Anyway. I mean, it's just to make, make sure that humans are not encroaching their habitat.
Yeah. Well, we'd anyway do that. But because of these laws, we are not, doing that in Antarctica, thankfully. So they were on a race now. And they reached the South Pole. The thing was, Scott was trying to conquer the South Pole through a way which was already established. You must have heard about Shackleton, who had
Ernest Shackleton. I think he was one of Scott's teammate, right? Before, in one of the expeditions. That is when he reached the 88th parallel. I mean, South Pole is 90 degrees. This was 88th parallel, which is like, what, around 120 kilometers from the South Pole or something like that.
So, yeah, he had a fallout later on with Ernest Shackleton. So, it was kind of like a revenge thing too. Like, if he reaches the South Pole, he could like rub it on his face right away. So, Scott was actually using a route which was already planned till, the 88th
parallel,
right? Yes. Yeah, so he had already known like the whole route till there. But Amundsen, coming from the other side, he had to like make the route for himself.
Oh yeah, Scott was coming from New Zealand and Amundsen was coming from Argentina, tip of Argentina, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that is actually completely opposite side of the continent.
Yeah, so they both reached, okay, and Scott had actually planned to like make a team of three, like the South Pole party, then they had the Western, the Northern, and the Northern party. So the Northern party was actually first an Eastern party, which was set out to, you know, the direction of Amundsen's party, so that they can do some experience. But while going to the eastern side of this Antarctica, they met the Amundsen's party. Okay. So, of course, they'll have the rage and all that within them. But
don't tell me they got engaged in a brawl or something.
No, no. Being the gentlemen they are, they actually were pretty friendly. Even Amundsen, he actually told them, you know, like, you guys can, you know, put your tents here and do your experiments and all that. But the UK guys, they respectfully disagreed. Because they had to go back and inform that these guys are already here. Because... You know, yeah, the funny part is there was no communication like how we have right now back then. So
you had to go and meet them and tell them.
Yeah, right? Even if Amundsen had not reached, they wouldn't know. But this was one thing which helped Scott know that they had already reached and the race is on.
One other interesting thing that came to my mind, you mentioned Eastern, Northern and all that, right? If you are on the South Pole, everything is Northern, right?
Yeah, but the thing is, they hadn't reached the South Pole, right? They were actually staying at some other place, which was not actually the South Pole. So, they had like East, North, West and South, whatever. So, the Eastern party returned and told Amundsen that, Scott, that Amundsen is already here. Everyone was angry, but, you know, Scott, he was like, you know, being the gentleman he is, you know, let's race. That's all we can do. We have other works to our scientific experiment. And once the Eastern party reached the camp again, they became the Northern party who was supposed to go and do some geological experiments. And the Western party, they were supposed to collect the eggs of penguins to get back and do some experiments. I don't know what kind of experiments it is because I couldn't find...
Experiment is simple, man. Take the eggs, put them in a frying pan, make omelets and eat and see whether they taste any good.
What if they are looking for some Egg Benedict kind of thing, not just an omelet? Who knows? I don't like Egg Benedict. It's oozy.
You don't like it because it's half-cooked, it right? I like that kind of stuff.
I hate it. I'm sorry.
I just love it so much.
I love my food.
Egg is supposed to be half-cooked. It's not supposed to be fully cooked.
Who made that rule?
I.
You. Get the out of here. Well, so this happened and they were on a race right now. So, this all happened in 1911. The beginning of 1911, during, you know, Feb, March and all that. And the winter was about to come and they camped.
Oh, yeah. One more thing. I'll just let our listeners know. Because it's Southern Hemisphere, right? The seasons are reversed. The time that we have summer here in Northern Hemisphere, they have their winter and vice versa.
Yeah, the same thing applies to Australia because they're in the Australia and New Zealand, right?
Hey, Australian listeners, you are not considered for this.
Well... So, they prepared for the winter and Amundsen, having a lot of experience in the Arctic, he knew that people will get bored. So, what he did was he made them play a lot, you know.
PlayStation, Xbox.
Nintendo Go. Yeah. So
I think, I think that product was made exclusively for Antarctic exploration.
Yeah, yeah. Like Ray-Ban was made for World War One.
Exactly. It was the official sponsor of World War One, in fact.
so they had to remain physically fit and not get bored, because if they get bored, the morale will go down. That's what happened when they like tried to conquer like the North Pole earlier on.
That is the same thing which happened during, I think, Magellan's expedition as well. When
Magellan.
He was... Is it Magellan?
It's Magellan.
It is Magellan?
Yeah.
I've always thought it's Magellan. Anyway, fine. Something learned today. So, Magellan. So, during the expedition where he was planning to go around the world, most of his crew, they got sick of the sea that they were seeing every day. And, you know, it was very difficult to kind of maintain them. That happens in most of these long distance journey and all that stuff.
Yeah. So, this was one issue, getting bored. So, they Amundsen did that, he already prepared for that. Bought a lot of books, played a lot of games and all that. There was one other issue, which was called scurvy. Because they wouldn't get proper nutrition. When Amundsen made the expedition to the Arctic, most of the crew got scurvy. So they had found out that back then they didn't know that it was because of vitamin C deficiency. But they found out that if you eat fresh meat, you wouldn't get scurvy. So what they had done was they caught seals, already caught tons of seals, and had that fresh meat like every day, two meals every day of fresh seal. They could have just
carried some strawberries or oranges or something.
They didn't know that it's vitamin C deficiency back then. They just knew that it'll happen if you don't eat meat. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good reason to eat meat.
Yeah, it's like a paleo or keto diet.
Yeah. So the thing was, Scott's expedition, they actually didn't have this much information. So some of the main people, they actually caught scurvy. And compared to Amundsen, the Scott's expedition, they had, quarters, which was divided into two. One for officers and, you know, other for like the lower tier people.
I think one thing we forgot to mention, they were naval officers, right?
Yeah.
Scott was from Navy.
Yeah.
So they had that difference between normal people and officers and all that kind of stuff going on.
Yeah. So the officers' quarter, they used to do experiments and all that. The other one, they'll, what is that? They'll just work out and chill out.
Drink, play cards, and stuff.
And they'll polish their equipment again and again so that they can be prepared. Sleds and all that. So that they can be prepared for the expedition once the winter gets over. So it was a period of 6 or 7 months. And one great difference between Scott's and Amundsen's expedition was that they used different techniques to conquer the South Pole. So in Scott's expedition, they used motorized sleds, ponies to carry supplies, and even sled dogs were there. But he was not that impressed with the work of dogs when he earlier, like in 1904 or 1903, when he came to Antarctica, he was not like impressed with the performance of the sled dogs. So what they plan to do was like they'll put out depots in between, near to South Poles, where they can load supplies when they go. And from the last depot, which was called the one-ton depot, where they'll have a lot of supplies, they'll manhole the sledges.
Mm-hmm.
They'll pull the sledges and go to South Pole instead of using sled dogs or motors.
Mm-hmm.
But the motor sleds actually failed in between.
Mm-hmm.
And Amundsen's way was using a lot of sled dogs. So he bought 105 of the finest sled dogs he could find and use them to pull the sleds. So it was like a completely different kind of expedition they were on.
You know something? You know, my car is in garage, right?
Hmm.
I've given it for repair. I'll ask them to cancel it off. Go and buy some sled dogs instead.
Sled dogs? You should get a bullock cart.
Sled dogs are more reliable than motorized vehicles, though, so I'll just...
But sleds won't work in, these kind of
roads. Whatever works here.
Cart, which is pulled by dogs, of course. Probably. Are you serious? Yeah. So, another thing to note was that Amundsen had put more effort in finding out the good breeds of sled dogs and choose them for the expedition. On the other hand, Scott had actually delegated the process to one of his subordinates who actually didn't know anything about ponies or sleds or anything. He ended up getting, some of the weakest ones.
Mm.
And they put out the depots before the winter. And as mentioned, the Northern Party, which was actually the Eastern Party first, they actually moved to another depot where they stayed for the whole winter so that they can reach the place where they are supposed to do experiments faster compared to where their actual camp is. Anyway, so the winter was almost over. Amundsen was very much, excited about conducting the expedition super fast, and he jumped the throttle.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you said he is using sled dogs, right?
Yeah.
Where was the throttle?
It's an expression. Yeah, he jumped the throttle and made a start in August,
mm-hmm.
like in between August. And what happened was they were almost like 100 kilometers over that far away from the camp, and mm-hmm. a blizzard came. So the winter was not actually, gone. So they had to cancel the first start, the fall start which they made, and had to come back to the camp.
Yeah,
almost died.
Yeah, winters have spoiled many plans. You remember Battle of Stalingrad, right? Yeah.
Russia has been saved by winter.
From Napoleon as well.
Yeah, twice.
Mm.
So, yeah. This happened and he knew that, okay, I'll have to wait for some more time. On the other hand, Scott's expedition started in September. Like, he revealed his plan in September, mid-September. And they actually planned to leave in teams, different teams. Like, the motor team then had, like, Scott's main party to go to the depot, first depot. And the motor team left the base in 24th October 1911. And Scott and his team left in on November 1st. So, they caught up at the first depot, and from there, there were like 16 men who had actually started the journey with a lot of, like, with their motor sleds and, like, a lot of dogs. And from the first depot, it was decreased to, like, 12 people. They reached the second depot. And finally, when they reached the Vantan depot, the actual plan was to choose 4 people, including Scott himself,
mm-hmm.
to go to the South Pole, man-hauling the sledges. But for some reason, he changed his mind and he selected one more person. Like, he didn't tell the 8 people who had accompanied to the one ton depot that who would be going with him. Like, he had actually planned to take 3 people, which was not revealed then. Mm-hmm. But when he reached there, he took 4 more people with him. So, these were Scott himself, and then you have Henry Robertson Bowers, and Lawrence Oates, Edgar Evans, and Edward Wilson. So, these 5 people made the expedition to the South Pole. On the other hand, the people who left from the last depot to the South Pole from Amundsen's expedition were 5 people whose name I don't know how to pronounce. Except Amundsen, I don't know who the other 4 people are. I know who the other 4 people are, but I don't know how to pronounce.
Scandinavian names.
Yeah, are you know what? We'll just put that names in the show notes. I'll put an asterisk over the people who are actually who actually made it to the South Pole, you know. Yeah, that it's better that I don't try to pronounce the names and butcher it. So Scott's expedition had 5 people who were going to the South Pole, and Amundsen also had 5 people going to the South Pole. So Amundsen, because he mainly used the sleds with dogs and all that, what they did was, when the dogs became weak, they'd kill that dog and feed themselves.
And the dogs.
So that's what they did. So it was like, you know...
So they were forcing dog cannibalism, right? I mean, if animal rights were existing those days, then he would have faced a lot of heat for that.
Actually, he actually faced a little bit of heat for that, saying that, you know, he actually used the dogs and killed them. Used the dogs to get there, but killed them in the process and all that. But what my findings have revealed is that they were actually sad killing these dogs and all that, because they had this connection with them. Well, right. This was a process which went on for a long time, you know. They started in October, right?
Mm.
But the whole expedition of going and coming back, the Amundsen's expedition, took... Can you guess how many days it took?
100 days.
99.
Huh.
It was a 99-day trip.
Wow.
They had to walk 3,440 kilometers. They had to walk, like, cover 3,440 kilometers in that harsh conditions.
Doing it with normal roads itself is a big deal.
Yeah. So, it took 99 days. So, in that time, they actually had developed a connection, but that was a plan they had made. So, they had to kill and eat them to sustain themselves. So, the ones which were weak, they'd kill them, they'll eat them. And in the final depot, they actually stored some of the meat and all that. So, Scott left for the South Pole and Amundsen did the same using the sleds, which were pulled by the dogs. And Scott's party, being man-hauling the sledge, actually went through a lot of issues because the climatic conditions were not that great. And they actually had to, like, on an average, they had planned everything to, like, cover, like, 15 miles every day. But they were falling back to, like, 11 miles or something while going. Some days they did really good, but the other days it was not that great. And Scott was a planner compared to Amundsen. Amundsen's plan was basically to dash to South Pole, check out the place, make a mark over there that he reached there first, come back and deliver the news.
Dash to South Pole, check in on Facebook, get out of the place.
Yeah. I'm safe. I'm safe, dears.
Checked into South Pole.
Yeah. But on the other hand, Scott had other plans too. He had to do a lot of scientific research experiments and also collect a lot of, you know, samples of rocks and all that. They actually did that while coming back. We'll get back to that later. So Scott thought, you know, if we go at this pace, we might have a chance to make it. And the date in which Scott made the South Pole was 17th of January 1912. And he passed Shackleton's, it was 88th parallel, right? It was on 9th of January 1912. So it took them 7 days to reach the pole from there.
Of course, when they crossed the 88th parallel, they would have had partied and then, you know, hangover and stuff like that. So it took them 8 more days.
There was no time for that. What do you think they're doing? They're not like, they're not doing a, what is that, Euro trip. It's not a Euro trip.
Of course, I mean, he just covered his rivals.
See, out of these days, they only got like 1.5 days time to chill and, you know, do.
I mean, I don't mean disrespect. I'm just, you know, imagining.
We have to make our podcast funny too.
I'm just imagining that they would have had some kind of consolation that they have crossed some kind of milestone.
Yeah. And because of the rivalry, which I mentioned earlier, it would have been a very, you know, satisfying thing to cross that Shackleton's mark. So, it took 7 days for them to reach from Shackleton's 88th parallel to the South Pole. But on 17th, they reached there. But you know what was the worst part?
Did they forget something in the ship?
No. On 16th, they could see the black flag, which was erected by Amundsen's party on the South Pole.
Well, he lost the race.
From far away. So think about it. You're on a quest to do something so great, and you had traveled so far, and you had put so much effort, you are risking your life to do it, and you find that someone has already been there.
But why was the flag black? Wouldn't it be a Norwegian flag, ideally?
The black flag, it's actually a black marker flag. And Scott and his party made it to the South Pole on 17th of January 1912. And they found Amundsen's tent over there. They inspected it and they found that Amundsen had left some of the equipments for Scott to use. And also a letter stating that they had reached on 14th of December 1911. So it was more than a month later when Scott reached the South Pole. So that's a huge gap if you look at it. Like, I don't know if back then it was like that, but now if you look at it, like, 1 month gap is like a huge gap, don't you think so?
Yeah, so Amundsen had already reached South Pole almost a month before Scott.
More than a month.
Yeah, more than a month.
Okay, so now that they had reached the South Pole, but they were they lost the race, now they had to go back. So their morale were already down and they made the expedition back. They were on the way. And they, as I told you earlier, Scott was a man who had planned every move. And he had this meteorologist named George Simpson, who also did the climatic condition check for them by placing ball balloons and all that other mechanism in Antarctica the year prior to this, to check all the readings and everything so that they can make the journey by knowing the exact climatic conditions. And the funny part was that he made all the calculations right, up to like plus or minus 3 degrees Fahrenheit. But the 1911 summer season was an odd year where the climatic condition, which was expected to be changed completely. And Scott had expected it to be windy and the climate to be around like over minus 30 degrees Celsius. But it went under minus 30 and became extremely cold, and they started getting frostbites. And it was not windy. Like, we associate wind with cold, right? But in Antarctica, wind is accompanied by warmth. Because the surface of Antarctica has a layer of air which is super cold. Because the icy surface loses heat fast. And the air which is on the surface is super cold. And the layer on top of that is warmer than the layer on which is near to the surface. So when wind comes, the layer on the top comes down and the whole climatic conditions become a little more warm. So Scott was expecting that, but it never came. And while on the way back, Edgar Evans and Lawrence Oates, they started getting frostbite. And frostbite is something which is like the enemy of any person traveling to climatic conditions which are like extremely cold. You won't be able to walk. You won't be able to put on your shoes. You won't be able to put on your socks. And at these climatic conditions, it was very hard for them to dry up their socks overnight and wear it in the morning. And Edgar Evans was showing a lot of signs of having low morale and, frostbite and all that. But he carried on. But in between, he met with a lot of accidents where his hand was cut and it didn't heal in this these kind of conditions. And he also had a fall where he hurt his head. And from the notes which was left by Scott, it was evident that Edgar Evans won't continue for long. And on February 17th, 1912, he succumbed to his injuries and he died. At the same time, as I mentioned, Oates also had the same issue and known that he wouldn't be able to continue longer. And Wilson was a doctor who was there with the Scott party. So Oates once asked him, like, what are my survival chances? And knowing that he didn't have that much of a chance, he told him that, I don't know. You might survive, you might not. So what Oates did was, one morning he told them, like, you know, I'm just going to go out. And I'll see you guys later. He just went, walked to his death. That's one prospect I can't even think of, you know, like walking to your death in Antarctica, like all alone. And they had to reach to the one-ton depot to save themselves. It became a fight for survival. And they had limited resources and fuel. And because of the cold weather and the radiation which the place suffers, the snow became crystalline kind of thing, woolly crystals, which made it hard for them to pull the sleds. And they had like a lot of supplies in it, like the scientific research stuff, which made it difficult for them to manage to carry the sled. And what was supposed to be like a 15-mile hike every day turned to something in between 3 to 5 miles. So you can see the difference. If they have to like travel 100 miles, it would have taken them like 9 to 10 days normally. But now it'd take them a month. And in between, the climatic conditions became better, but it again went back to minus 30 degrees and more. And they couldn't actually continue properly. So actually, they had put a meeting point in between one ton depot, where they were supposed to be met by a team of sled like dogs to help them carry the sleds forward to the one-ton depot. But due to some miscommunication which happened, they didn't come. And Scott knew that they might not last longer. And on the 20th of March 1912, they reached around like 11 miles from the one-ton depot. And there was a blizzard which hit the place and they had to camp there for a few days. And they thought like the blizzard will go in like 2-3 days. But what happened was, it said that it went on for like at least 10 days. And Scott made his last entry on the 29th of March, which said, every day we have been ready to start for our depot 11 miles away. But outside the door of the tent, it remains a scene of whirling drift. I do not think we can hope for any better things now. We shall stick it out to the end, but we are getting weaker, of course, and the end cannot be far. It seems a pity, but I do not think I can ride more. For God's sake, look after our people. So he knew that they are gonna die, but you know, they went out in style, I think. So there is another theory with regard to the blizzard. Like it is said that in Antarctica, the blizzard would last for like 3 to 4 days. But from Scott's entry, we get to know that it lasted for like more than 10 days. So the speculation is that Scott already had frostbite and was not able to walk properly. So it is said that Wilson and Bowers, they made him believe that there was blizzard outside so that Scott won't ask them to leave him and go to the depot, leaving him alone. So it is said that Wilson and Bowers actually sacrificed their life for their leader, Scott.
I find it hard to believe, because of just saying that, you know, blizzard lasts only 4 days and not 10 days is not up to anyone to decide. Any climatic condition is bound to change. As you said, there were some deviations from the initial assessment of the climate anyway. And again, saying that, you know, they would have just decided to die with him, that again seems to be, too much of a heroism to me. Because if they have a chance to escape, I think they would have just taken it.
Yeah, that's true. So going back to Amundsen's thing, Scott came to know that they had reached the South Pole on 14th of December. And Amundsen, when they reached at the South Pole, they wanted to make it clear that they have reached the South Pole. So they camped there for 3 days and used their instruments to figure out the proper South Pole. And after 3 days, they found out that the place where they have camped is actual South Pole, and that's where they put the flag. And Amundsen wanted to go back and report it to the camp immediately. They started their journey back, and because it's it was during the summer, right?
Mm.
They had all round light throughout. So what they did was they'd walk for 6 hours. They take 6 hours break.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they'll walk for 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they were able to cover around 50 kilometers per day,
mm-hmm.
which was usually around 25 kilometers per day. But because of their all round light, they were able to cover double the distance. And they reached back to the camp, their camp on 25th of January, 1912.
Mm-hmm.
And the world got to know that Amundsen was the first person to reach the pole. Once getting back to Scott and his party, it is said that they perished on 29th March 1912, and there was a couple of search parties sent to look after them. But by then, winter came back, and they had to wait for almost 7 months to send a search party again, and they found their camp on in November. And it was revealed that they were almost close to the one ton depot, and they still rest there. And the information that they had perished was sent back to UK back then. But it took almost a year for Amundsen and George Simpson, who was the meteorologist, to get to know that Scott had perished.
Mm.
So looking at that, we get to know that unlike today, information took a lot of time to travel. So probably that's one reason why, Scott perished. If he had known about, how this is going to end, and if he was able to convey the message to his camp a little earlier, they could have set up a search party to come and help them. So it is actually scary to think that, because of information not being received at the right place at the right time, things like this happen.
Yeah, it goes into planning as well. But that was a fact then. I mean, it's not like if in the present day you have, after living in all this information age, if suddenly you're taken away from all this, it makes a difference. For them, that never existed. So the planning should have been according to that, is what I feel.
Okay, anyway, so to finish off, the information that Scott had died overpowered the thing that Amundsen had conquered South Pole first. Actually, Amundsen was looked down upon because he had cancelled his plan to go to North Pole and put on a race with Scott, which was considered ungentlemanly back then.
Mm-hmm.
And for almost half a century, Scott was hailed to be, the man who had, made the journey to South Pole. And so that's the fate of the expeditions to the South Pole. One party completed it successfully, the other perished.